I'm back and everything is awesome. I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, head out of the Del Real, here with my partner, friend, colleague, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle, amongst other hats that the gentleman wears. This is the 329th episode of our weekly therapy session we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk about markets, why everything is awesome, why everything will remain awesome. That's only for asset owners, by the way. Everything will not be awesome for the rest of you all. And we're going to talk about some of the crazy stuff going on around us. But before we get to all that, Señor Hodge, how goes you, sir?
I go very well, Gerardo. Soaking up the last month of summer here, having fun with the kids who are counting down the days back to school and having fun in the markets, as you intimated there as well, with indexes close to all-time highs, gold going back up on the return of easy money, and as we were just discussing, lots of quality exploration that we're excited about receiving results for as we head into the fall conference season. So it's good to have you back. I'm glad your trip went well, and happy anniversary again. Tell me where you want to start.
Thank you, sir. No. It's great to be back. Had a phenomenal time. Got to spend some just really relaxing days with my beautiful wife, celebrating our 19th wedding anniversary. So recharged, feeling like a wound up monkey as I usually do a little bit more now with the recharge and the battery pack on full. So no, listen, let's get right into it. I want to start with the overall indices and the jobs number that we got here, the revisions, I should say, that were pretty substantial, and how that has changed the landscape from quite possibly a rate cut, right? I think you wrote earlier that there was a 50% chance of a rate cut, and now it's almost the given that there will be a rate cut in September if you listen to the folks that are supposed to be smarter than us. And what that means is what's happening in the market. Stocks are headed higher, meme stocks are back, gold, silver, running higher, copper higher, even the more speculative side of the market running higher. So again, if you're an asset owner, that jobs revision was a gift to us. If you are not an asset owner, then you are literally about to get your ass handed to you by this market and by the inflation that's coming, that will be accompanied with the rate cuts that are coming. And I mean, you know my rant on this, Nick. I don't want to get, 10 minutes into ranting against the Fed. But, I happen to benefit and you happen to benefit from the easy money policy. We have access to capital. We have access to credit. We have access to the markets. And we have a lot of hard assets, right? Whether that's real estate, gold, stocks, you name it. Good for us. But I really hate what it does for the other 99% of the world, because everything's getting more expensive, folks. And so you don't need an economist or the Fed or anyone to tell you that. You could just go shopping and people are going back to school shopping right now. You can see it. You can feel it. The shoes cost more. The clothes cost more. My cup of coffee in the morning costs $7 now. $7 for a cup of coffee, right? And so everything is awesome for asset owners. Thoughts on the overall markets, overall indices, and the speculative fervor that has seemed to return with us, that I think is going to be with us for quite some time.
Yeah, lots to say. You can see the rest of the world starting to struggle a little bit, especially in emerging markets, as the cleanest dirty shirt, as you like to say, sits on the top of the laundry basket. That's the U.S. Equity market. I'm not talking about the dollar right now. There's a lot to unpack there. Let's start with the jobs numbers. So you might have seen, as you said, that there were significant revisions, like something like 120 to 150,000 jobs they were off by from the previous number. That's not really something new. So you're not going to get some wild take from me. Hopefully you've come to expect that from now. I'm not on Trump's side of firing the head of the BLS and saying the numbers are fake. At all. So, but there is some truth to the giant downward revisions. So let's unpack that for a second. You know, typically, I think I saw some research that said over the past 12 to, or since they changed the metrics for how they calculate, the average revision is something like 50,000 jobs. So this is not something new, as I said, but it is quite larger than the typical revision, which I just said was 50,000. It was more than twice as big. There's inherently problems in the way the BLS collects the data. They're still doing phone surveys, etc. And to be
sorry,
nobody
to
picks up the fucking phone, right? So to be expected, the private number, right? The private sector does things better than the public sector, right, Gerardo? So like the ADP number was closer. It's just an antiquated system that the BLS uses. Nonetheless, that is, as you rightly said, the catalyst that we had to now expect easy money again. So you know that Jerome and Trump have been fighting about rates. Trump has wanted him to cut rates for some time. We had a dog and pony show in the Federal Reserve Building 2 or 3 weeks ago with both gentlemen wearing hard hats. You recall all this. He wants Powell out. He wants lower rates. Powell says we're data dependent. Inflation is still going up, et cetera, et cetera. You got no rate cut at the most recent July meeting. And coming out of that meeting, there was only a 50% chance of a cut. In September, no meeting in August. We all have, in Italian, we call it Ferragosto, but we take the month off for August. So coming out of that last meeting, there was a 50% chance of a rate cut in September. After that, jobs number went to a 90%, not just one chance of a rate cut in September, now a 90% chance of one rate cut in September, something like a 60% chance of two rate cuts by the next meeting. And then by the end of the year, they're pricing in now a 50% chance of three rate cuts. So we went from a 50-50 chance of one rate cut to now we're pricing in close to three rate cuts. And obviously, that's good for the things that you mentioned. Gold has added $100 in the past month or so, back near 3,400, not above it yet. Silver perked back up. Both of those are in range, by the way, and remain bullish. And other things have happened since you've been gone, like Kelly Clarkson. You know, meme stocks came back. The NASDAQ has hit all-time highs. As you say, everything is awesome. So that's the backdrop. I should mention GDP, no recession on the horizon. It came out. Also, while you were gone, the Q2 number came out on July 30th from the BLS. Yep. It was 3% growth, Gerardo, 3.0% growth. Doge failed miserably. We didn't cut shit. You got a big, beautiful bill. And ironically, as I've been writing, it's that wanton government spending and debt that propels that growth. So wrap your head around that and put it in your account, which is hopefully an all-time record highs as gold does what it's doing and as the rest of the market does what it's doing. So the last thing is inflation. It ticked back up in June. You'll probably see it start to moderate. But even if it does start to moderate from here, you're still a third higher than the Fed's intended target rate. So lots of stuff going on out there. Hopefully that was easy to understand and you were able to follow along. And we've been crushing it on both sides. You've got stocks that are hitting highs. I saw Perpetua had like a 24 handle on it and getting visits from the Secretary of Labor. So lots to like out there. And I'm sure we've got plenty more to talk about. So sorry for droning on.
No. That was the answer I was looking for. Nice, thorough answer. Let's you mentioned gold. I believe gold closes the week above the 3,400 level. Silver looking resilient. They try to push it back towards 36, 37. It wasn't having it. It's firmly above 38, looking like it wants to make another run at 40. And look, just to put one last point on your insightful take there, we're getting news now that, you know, Donald Trump has narrowed down his potential pick to be for the Fed chair, whether, you know, Powell resigns or, you know, his term comes up in May of 2026, if I'm not mistaken. Right. And so the people on that list were all pretty much the same type of people. It's dovish. You're going to get a lot of rate cuts and you're going to get a lot of money printing. So again, for those of you not in the game, you don't have to follow what Nick says or what I say or buy what we buy. I just implore you all, whatever you're comfortable with, whatever your risk tolerance is, whatever you can afford to put into the market and feel confident, you got to get in the game, folks, because the 9-to-5 thing, that model is dead. And it's unfortunate. It's by design, everybody. You have to have different revenue streams now. And so whether it's $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, or $1 million, you got to get in this market and you know, look for guidance wherever you feel comfortable. If we can help provide that, we would love to, obviously. But do something. This is not the time, like Keith McCullough says. It's not a time to do nothing, right?
Yeah, and it's happening in the gold stocks as well. Like you say, everybody's risk appetite is different, but even the majors are breaking out. Agnico reported earnings in the past couple of weeks, crushing it, right? GDX is breaking out 14-year highs. GDXJ is breaking out. So across different ranges of company profiles and risk profiles, things are moving up.
Things are moving up. I want to talk copper. we had copper tariffs and then we didn't have copper tariffs on the refined metal. And, you know, all that happened was basically what we said would happen, whether or not tariffs were implemented. If they did get implemented, copper goes higher. If they don't get implemented, copper goes higher. Now, you know, the futures got smacked down, obviously, right? Because there was a 20-30% pop in the futures price. There was a premium there that, you know, everyone assumed Trump would apply tariffs on refined copper. And that wasn't the case. But if you look at the spot price is pretty much where it was beforehand. And so the structural deficits that we keep preaching to you all about, and structural deficits meaning more demand than supply. Very, very simple. That trend is going to be our friend for the next several years. And so any thoughts on copper tariffs? Does it matter? Copper's going higher, in my opinion. Thoughts on your end of it?
Yeah, a bit of a gut punch. I mean, I had been talking up FCX, the premium in that Freeport, got largely erased. We're still up. We've been in it for 2 quarters. We've got 2 dividend payments, so we're up. But it essentially raised the U.S. premium on not just copper prices, but copper stock prices. So essentially, they bifurcated. The copper prices were going up higher on the COMEX than they were on the LME, and that got erased. You know, we got within a cock hair, a term I bring up every once and then, of $6 on the copper price, and then we went back below 4 in a day, right? I mean, it was like a 20% or 25% sell-off when Trump announced that those tariffs weren't going to be applied. So but you know, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and now I see opportunity in you know, other stocks that got knocked down as a result of those same tariffs. So what happened is, you know, producers from, you know, South America, Brazil, Africa, you know, they were trading downward because it was assumed by the market that they were going to have tariffs applied to their metals and their exports, importing it to the United States. So now there's opportunities in the global copper space that you should be looking at. And I am, in fact, looking at. Shameless plug, as always, we'll be making a recommendation in that vein in tomorrow's issue of Foundational Profits.
Excellent. Gotta touch back on gold really quick. You touched on Agnico, a beautiful balance sheet, brilliant execution. The margins are healthy. And I say all that to say, I anticipate a significant wave of M&A, mergers and acquisitions, over the next several months. We know that summer is coming to an end for a lot of folks. The kids are back in school. Conference season kicks up. A lot of the bigger conferences kick off in September, where a lot of the deals get made. I expect the next couple of months to be fever pitched as it relates to M&A in the gold space. And I don't think it's going to just be, you know, gold companies. I think, you know, copper M&A is going to start to perk up as well. And so any thoughts on M&A based on the fact that these companies are starting to show really, really healthy balance sheets?
You know, I'm not an M&A expert. There's obviously consolidation that needs to happen. You know, we've known and we've been saying and we've been told for years that the majors need to replenish their reserves, just like we've been told the utilities need to contract on uranium. But that's another story we might get to in a second. Yep. And none of that stuff has really happened. There's been, fits and starts, I guess, of acquisitions. We've seen things with Calibre or Caliber. We've seen we've seen some of the almost the opposite. We've seen the divestiture of some assets from the majors as they further clean up their balance sheets, right? Like Equinox just shed some assets this morning. I was reading, and they're squarely a mid-tier producer. So, yeah, I think the pump is primed, to use one of those colloquial sayings, for the M&A. And this is a good time for it to happen, as you said, with the Denver Gold Forum and Beaver Creek coming up. So, I'm not one of these guys that goes out and hunts acquisition targets. I know some folks that's their strategy and great, but that's not the game I play. I'd rather find quality companies that I know could be a mine, get into production and have the share structure to weather ups and downs in the markets. And sometimes that does lead to takeouts, but that's not why I go into them. So, I mean, while you were asking the question, I just wrote down a couple of names. So I guess I'm feeling generous today. These aren't even really in some of the portfolios. They're just names I know are going to be in the M&A mix when it comes up. Like something has to happen with Wesdo. Yeah. Something has to happen with Artemis that just went into production in BC with Kick Canada's newest gold mine. They might even end up being an acquirer given that their market cap is now in the billions, right? Yeah. Alamos Gold is probably in the mix as an acquirer as well because of their market cap. And then, targets out there is G2 is a pretty obvious one. And Osisko Development, which has a permit and just announced financing to build a mine in Canada. So, and that's just thinking about it for 10 seconds. So I there's definitely some acquisitions that need to happen. Will any of those be caught up? I don't know, but quality opportunities for you to go investigate on your own time if you'd like.
Love it. Listen, speaking of quality opportunities, I had a phone call earlier with a gentleman who we're finalizing some due diligence on a potential financing for. We should have that to you in the next week or two. And my conversation with this gentleman, I made it clear to him the amount of pride and work that we put into vetting deals for our subscribers, friends, families, and of course ourselves, right? We're biased. We eat our own cooking and eat a lot of it oftentimes. And so I explained to him, I said, look, last year in 2024, we had 11 deals and 10 of those are in the green and one is about to be in the green here in the next couple of weeks, I suspect. So no pressure, but we're 11 for 11 last year with several of those up triple digits. I said, in this year, the last two or three deals that we've rolled out, a few of them are already up over triple digits, over 100%. I say that to say the next two deals that we have, one that just went live literally 20 minutes ago for private placement intel, is a uranium deal that has a market cap of $2 million with this team that has got a history of success. They've monetized companies several times. We've made money with this group before. And they have pounds on the ground, something like 11 million pounds on the ground of historic pounds with exploration upside. If it was just the team coming to us and saying, hey, we got the team together again, we're going to put a shell up and we're going to do a financing, I would say take my money at a $2 million valuation. The fact that they're coming to us and allowing us to offer this deal to subscribers at a $2 million valuation, it makes my heart smile because it's easy money, folks. Sometimes, again, I don't think I'm the brightest bulb in the box. I don't particularly fancy myself as an expert in any one thing. But this is as easy as it gets, right? This is like when I recommended Kingsman at 16 cents in the private placement or Hannon back in the days, at 15 cents, 25 cents, 35 cents. It's a $2 million market cap. You're going to have to go through the service to get access and allocations. If you have anything over $5,000 to $10,000 to put into the market, this is the time where you go and you sign up for private placement intel, get the service and participate in this kind of deal. Cause this one's easy money, folks. Like it's just easy money. I don't know if you want to add anything to it. I don't want to give the name away, obviously, but I don't know how much simpler I could tell you guys that if you guys just want to make some money, easy money, just sign up to our service and participate in that deal. I'll tell you this, if you can't make money on this deal, Gerardo Del Real, I'll give you your money back. Just right in.
Feeling bold, I see.
Yep.
No, you're right about the deals we've done recently and the track record. They've gone very well. It's been 1 month since we offered a private placement. We do, you know, 6 to 10 private placements a year. The last one was 30 days ago. It was a tiny copper company that's already up 100%. We financed that with Jeff Phillips and Rick Rule, and several of you who listen and read our stuff took the opportunity to join us at Private Placement Intel and participate in that private placement, which we think is going to be a good one. This uranium one this week is going to be a good one as well. So you mentioned the team. We've made money with them before. We both wrote editorials this week about the last time we funded URZ Energy. And you have to go read them. Just go on Daily Profit Cycle. But essentially, we financed that company at 15 cents with warrants at 40 cents. And then again at 45 cents with warrants at 75 cents. And it ended up getting taken out by a company called Azarga Uranium, which had an in situ asset in South Dakota called Dewey Burdock, which in turn got taken out by Encore Energy, which went on to consolidate shares and rise to near $7. So there were some forward splits and some consolidations in there. But at the end of the day, we had four positions, the best of which went up something like 850%. All those warrants got exercised and made money for everybody involved. So astute listeners will recall that we've already financed the second iteration of URZ, that company I just mentioned. And so that's done and gone. But this you could view as the second iteration of Azarga. That's the team that's coming in here. So they clearly have in situ expertise in the United States. This asset that they just picked up in New Mexico, as you said, has an 11 million pound historic resource, but not historic like 1960s or 70s, historic like 2009, 2011. The property is so prospective and mineable that a company did start building a mine there in the 60s and 70s. They sunk a shaft to mine it underground, in fact, and then uranium prices softened and they ended up never mining a single pound of uranium. So all that still sits there. Obviously, it's a pretty good backstop for a $2.5 million valuation that you just pointed out. So a couple of other key points. The re-rate potential is the company thinks that this deposit is amenable to ISR recovery. They've already seen data that shows them that. They put that in the press release, and they'll spend the next couple of months trying to prove that up. This thing will be worth a lot more if they can show that they can produce it with ISR instead of conventional or underground mining. The last point would be that management owns 43% of shares, management and insiders, and including former management of Azarga Uranium. And some 36% of that 43% are locked up until October 2026. And oh, by the way, this deal is being done at 5 cents, which is a lower price than any of the insiders or founders have ever had the chance to buy a share. So, like
I
you
almost
said,
feel bad writing a check. It's fucking the easiest. This is going to be the second easiest money that I make this year. You already know what my other silly dumbass one is that it's going to end up being hilarious for me. But this one is like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, trying not to confuse a bull market for brains and trying to stay working. I'll be writing a check, obviously. I just laid it out there pretty simply. So private placement intel, the ranks are growing. People continue to join. The deal flow continues to improve. The response from those who participate in those deals continues to improve. And we're offering a discount for 2025. This is a $5,000 a year product for high net worth institutional accredited investors. We're selling it for 2025 to reflect the year. But that's only around for a couple of more months. I should note that we are 60-some% of the way through the year. And so 2026 will be here before you know it. And we won't be charging 2026. In 2026, we'll be charging $5,000 given the track record, et cetera. So we'll have a link up as always. We'll be sending out emails to Daily Profit Cycle and Resource Doc Digest. But Uranium itself, we didn't really touch on, is looking good. Clear support from the Trump administration, clear growth in the realm of nuclear energy, small modular reactors, etc. And this is a U.S. asset in a jurisdiction that has proven past production. So pretty good swing at the pitch, as it were.
Yeah, no, look, I couldn't have said it better myself. Easy money, good work if you can get it. Excited for the deal. I also want to say a hello to those of you that wrote in with testimonials. We got a couple of really nice ones this week. And, you know, shout out to Doug, shout out to Mark. Thank you guys for the kind words. You all took time out of your day to send in pretty lengthy testimonials. And it means a lot, like to Nick and myself, because, again, we do work hard to try to vet these deals. And do they all work the way we want to? Absolutely not. Super Q Quantum is the silly deal that I keep calling it silly.
You silly mentioned because- it here.
Yeah, I mean, give you the freebie there. I call it silly because I just, you know, I walked into a bunch of shares from what I thought was a uranium deal to hydrogen storage deal. I wrote four checks, never sold a share, never exercised a warrant, just sat there because it went down to a penny and a half post-consolidation, 15 cents. And I thought, well, what's the point in selling if I'm not going to get that significant tax break anyway? Let me just hold it. And, you know, sure enough, here shares are sitting at $1.40, $1.45. And look, like they have a lot of runway to go. So again, that's just dumb luck. I didn't do anything to earn the money that's coming in from inheriting those shares, but I'm happy to have them and thankful to have them, obviously. And on this uranium deal, this is just as no-brainer as it gets. And so thanks for the testimonials, folks. Thanks for writing in. That's all I got on that front. I just wanted to just take a moment and say it makes a difference when we hear back from people because you don't always get that, right?
Yeah, appreciate the testimonials. Hadn't really asked for them for private placement intel before, but did a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, appreciate y'all taking the time out of your day to write in and glad you're having the success that you're having, right? I mean, that's awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do we want to get to the premium portion of the podcast? Is there anything else? I guess we got to talk crypto. You and Chris did a phenomenal job while I was gone holding down the fort here with the podcast. Do you want to touch on Bitcoin? I mean, there's just an announcement that they're carving a path, surprise, surprise, for Bitcoin and crypto to make its way into private 401ks. And so I think that's going to be the beginning of the privatization of a lot of 401ks. And look, I'm for individual investors having more control over their finances. One of the things that irks me a bit is, I'll give you an example. I have a friend and she was going through a divorce and she asked if I could look at, you know, her 401k and move some things around for her. And of course I said, absolutely. Of course. I even gave her the whole speech. These are the risks. This is the upside. This is the downside. This is what could happen. But you know, she had, you know, well into the six figures in her 401k, and it was all in, you know, your traditional stuff. You know how you know how the bonds do. It's through Vanguard, right? And so they do, you know, an allocation to bonds, sure, an allocation to blue chips, you know, that whole model. And so
the VU.
You got it. So look, we were fortunate enough. I got her out of all of that stuff immediately. I know you wouldn't do this, Nick. I just told her, look, if you lose money, I'll backstop it. But I got her into Patriot Battery Metals at like 35 cents, right? A lot of it. Got her into Aldebaran at 60 cents. A lot of it. Got her into a couple of other names. And fortunately, it worked out in spades, right? Those six figures became seven figures plus and all is well. I say all that to say, now in her account, when I look at it and we're going through things and I'm looking at things, they no longer allow, they would no longer allow her to invest her capital into a Patriot Battery Metals because of the requirement on over-the-counter stocks. And they want them to trade at least a dollar. And so that's the opposite to me of, you know, enabling people to take their financial life into their hands, right? By restricting them into what they can do. Now, I get that there should be safeguards in place when people don't know what they're doing. But if they're willing and they're aware and they're of sound mind and they want to reallocate capital, they should be able to reallocate capital wherever they feel fit, right? And so, Yeah, so we set her up with a brokerage account in Canada, and now Vanguard doesn't get to see that money. The money comes out, and anytime there's a financing I like, she writes a check over there, and she's done well with it. She's become quite the little investor. So, yeah, thoughts on crypto into 401ks and private 401ks, and do you think that's a trend that continues into other assets? Like gold is where I'm going.
Well, yeah, it's a good decision, first of all. I'm glad to see the new administration ease up on the war on crypto. There's been lots of beneficial things. We've talked about the Genius Bill on this podcast. I sort of laid that out for you many weeks ago. That has now come through. Bitcoin has gone to all-time record highs, and this is a very bullish announcement. It allows people to own the actual cryptocurrency in their retirement accounts. So, a couple of things. I mean, you could technically have already done this, right? You could have bought like
Sure.
an ETF that has been approved in the past year. By the way, the fastest growing ETFs that humanity has ever seen. You could have put that in an IRA or a 401k and got tax advantage treatment from it, but now this is straight up allowing the underlying asset itself to be included. Similar with gold, you've been around long enough, Gerardo. I'm sure you've seen a gold IRA pitch, a self-directed IRA pitch. You've got to put in a little bit of legwork, but you can do it increasingly. And I think this ties into a lot of things. I don't want to get too deep into it because I didn't prepare, but you said earlier that you sort of got to have a side hustle or you got to have another stream of income. It's getting more difficult out there.
Facts.
I think the powers that be see that, and I think that some of these moves are meant to improve the long-term capital returns and tax situation of those folks. I mean, and so you should be taking advantage of it. One thing I would say is that we already take advantage of it. Some of the things I do in Foundational Profits is about taxes and long-term capital gains harvesting, and I've advised about backdoor Roths and things like that. So you should already be putting your best foot forward in terms of your tax situation to have figured some of this stuff out. The other thing I see is increasing dollars and trends going toward private capital, which I'm not an expert in, but I read enough to know that I've seen a lot of Bloomberg articles about the rise of private equity, the rise of private lending, and how banks that traditionally made most of their profits from lending and trading desks are increasingly getting into the private game itself. And so, I don't want to lose track or lose my train of thought here, but one, I think you'll see that trend c continue. I think you'll see 401ks, IRAs opened up to private equity and private investments. And I also think you'll see the continuation of the ETF trend because there's an ETF trend for anything now. I mean, you can buy leveraged ETFs on a single stock, you can buy a Tesla leveraged ETF that's just fucking zero date expiration options concentrated on a single stock, and it's also easier than ever to apply for and create an ETF. There's even ETFs being created now that are meant to harvest tax losses and lower your tax bill. So think about this, Gerardo. Nick Hodge manages a sizable portfolio, right? I could turn my portfolio into an ETF, my own personal ETF. I could sell stock in the ETF as a gain, replace it with something else, and not have to pay capital gains tax because it's inside an ETF and being re replaced with someone else. So we continue to engineer the financial game. We continue to find up with new ways to play it. And Google that, tax loss harvesting ETFs. I just read about that in the past week or so. So little bit of a tangent there from your question about Bitcoin and retirement accounts, but in some respect, it has become onerous to do some of the things we do. So, Now I'm really getting all over the place, but I have a buddy who does some of the private placements that we do. And I know for a fact that Canaccord won't take your shares anymore if it's an under 50 cent company, right? So
yeah.
these companies got to get to 50 cents, or you've got to find other ways to do things. And again, that's some of the benefit going back to private placement intel that we provide, right? We recommend brokers. I had a guy from Italy called Jimmy this morning wanting to know how he could get his shares deposited. Does his current broker, can they help him out? You know, I did 10 minutes of research and hopefully help the guy out so he can participate in private placements. But anyway, let me wrap up there because I didn't really give you an answer. But Bitcoin is bullish. This is a bullish announcement for crypto. The trend and the administration is in crypto's favor. And I see increased tokenization coming as well. I mean, Chris was talking about it last week. So go back and listen to that episode. But a lot to like in crypto land. And as I said last week, and like you said, everything is awesome. I bought and recommended an Ethereum ETF like a month and a half ago. That's up 60%, right? So, like you said, you got to own this stuff.
Got to own the stuff. You guys got a lot. You guys and gals got a lot of free stuff out of us this week. SuperQ Quantum Computing, formerly ATCO QBTQ. I know nothing about quantum. I'll preface my next comment by starting there. But I own a whole lot of it, and it looks like a real company. And the CEO sounds like he is hell bent on getting this to a many $100 million and eventually $1 billion valuation within the next 12 to 18 months. That's a long way from the $36 million that it's at now. So if you're into quantum and you're a whole heck of a lot smarter than I, go to the website, superq.co. Nick gave you some copper picks. I got to say lithium, I continue to say I believe it has finally bottomed. I was wrong on that for like a year. Didn't really matter because my investment timeline horizon is a lot longer than most people's. I do 3 to 5 year waves. It's kind of the way that I was brought up to allocate capital. So yeah, it's doing what it's supposed to do. We had a super bull market for like 2-3 years and then it dipped and for a year and a half consolidated. Now it looks like we're back on the uptick and going into deficits in 2026, 2027. Markets being forward looking, you might want to look at some of those lithium positions that you thought were dead. Anything to add there, Nick, before we transition to the premium portion?
No, sir.
I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. It was great to be back. Missed it last week, though. Thoroughly enjoyed the vacation. I am Gerardo Del Real. With Mr. Hodge, as I was saying, this was the 329th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. Have a great week, everyone. Happy belated anniversary, beautiful wife. Happy birthday, Eileen. Hello, Raul. Doug, Mark, everybody that wrote in. Appreciate y'all. Have a good one, everybody.
See ya.